Transition Radio from San Diego, exploring the world of change with you. Are you ready to take your life to a new level? Join transition coaches and best-selling authors Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster as they explore strategies to navigate changes in health, relationships, money, career, and so much more. Get the information and tools to make your life smoother, easier, and more productive. And now, your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster.
Welcome to Transition Radio. Paula Shaw here with my co-host Kendi Foster, and we are coming to you today on 9/11, and we have lots to talk about that. It was a pretty huge day in our country's history, and Ken, good to be here with you, as always.
It's so good to be with you today, Paula. And talking about tragedy today, positive changes that come out of tragedy. Mm-hmm. So this isn't a down show. This is an up show.
Yes.
And but, you know, there are people out there that are going through changes, you know, as a result of tragedies, mm-hmm. Of their own making or somebody else's making.
Yes.
And so this is important to talk about, and we are going to talk about 9/11, so let's get into that, Paul.
You know, it just seems to happen that we all remember exactly where we were when tragic things happen. I mean, I remember exactly where I was when I heard about the Kennedy assassination and, you know, others of those things that happened at that period of our lives when we were young and impressionable. So where were you on 9/11?
Yeah, I was at home with my wife, and I think we got a call from a family member that said to turn on the TV, and mm-hmm. we turned the TV on, and we were watching the first building burning, and then we saw the plane go into the second building, and mm-hmm. we our world kind of stopped at that moment. We realized that our nation was in trouble. We realized that there were several thousand people that were probably going to lose their lives. Mm-hmm. And we realized that we needed to stop and pray. And that's what we did. Wow. Yeah, that was the first thing that came to our mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I remember waking up that day with my daughter running into the bedroom going, "Mom, turn on the TV." And pretty much at the same time you did, I saw the plane hit the second building. And of course, it was horrifying. Even now, I can actually feel the emotion of that, the shock of it, you know, that we've been so blessed in this country that those kinds of violent acts haven't really happened on our soil much. You know, we haven't had to deal with acts of war and that kind of thing on our shores. We've mostly been out in the world fighting in other countries. So the shock of it was horrific. And I remember the two of us just sitting there holding each other. And then at some point, my son woke up and came in, and it was just my children and I. And it was a really difficult moment. You know, as a single parent, I didn't know exactly how to comfort my children, especially as I was falling apart myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of our single parents out there can relate to those moments when you don't have someone else to help you, to hold you, and particularly a male, mm-hmm. to make everybody feel safe and to, you know, to ground us.
Right.
And so it was a tough day. And, you know, but I learned a really valuable lesson that day. Because as it happened, I was writing a grant at the time to try to get funds to publish two books that I had in mind. And the woman who was helping me called me later in the day and said, "How are the grants coming?" And I said, "Are you kidding? Have you seen what's happening? You know, are you watching the mm-hmm. television?" And she said to me, "Paula, turn off your TV. The world needs these books more now than ever before, and you are of no value sitting there mesmerized by watching this horrific scene over and over and over again," which is what we were all doing.
Right.
And you know what, Ken? I turned off the news, I have never turned the news on since.
Yeah.
And I learned after that really the news is designed to create enough fear in people that they're going to come back and listen to it again. And there is some positive news out there, and God knows we all want to know that. But to scare ourselves day after day with what's going on in
the world, I think that's a really good point. I think that, you know, the news is there to inform you. But if it's just fear-based news, and some of the news stations are that, it's just amazing to me. But, you know, that's not what it was designed for. It was designed to inform.
Right.
And then, you know, with the gifts of modern technology, you can play it over and over and over again. But is that really what you want to put in your consciousness?
Exactly.
And you said no, and I applaud you for that, because... Mm-hmm. That's not the way to use the mind.
Especially at night. So many people watch the news just before they go to bed.
Right.
So those images are the last thing that you're planting in your consciousness. Not necessarily the best way to get a good night's sleep or to relax your brain before you go to sleep, you know?
Well, I think a lot of people don't realize that that last thought that you put in your mind at night, you're probably going to play that over and over again, subconscious mind. You're probably going to dream about those things consciously or unconsciously. Is that really what you want to dream about?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good point.
And to just on the other side of that, what you're saying, you could also consciously use that time to plant something positive in there, some beautiful vision of what you're going to do or create the next day, or something you want to feel about yourself, or a condition you want to create in your life. That's a much more powerful thing to plant into your mind just before you go to sleep.
And I think that if anybody... wants to understand how to use that mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good place to start. It's a really good place to start to consciously make a decision in the evening to fill your mind full of positive thoughts, positive energy.
Right.
And just experiment with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how I started.
Yeah.
I just thought, well, experiment with it. It works for me, great. If not, I'll throw it out.
Yeah.
And see how I feel in the next morning. And for me, what happened is I started waking up alert and ready and alive and feeling good.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, you know, this works.
Yeah.
This positive stuff works. Interesting.
And you probably had a lot better sleep than you would have had you been focusing on something fearful or something that was anxiety provoking.
Absolutely. So, Paula, that's, you know, what we're talking here is really for you, what happened is a positive change came out of tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you and I are discussing in the studio, do positive changes always come out of tragedy? And I say, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't take time as a nation or as an individual to reflect on, you know, even 9/11, what was our part in it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people well know there's no part in the United States. Well, that's not true. We have a part. And same thing with any tragedy in our life.
Mm-hmm.
We have some kind of a part normally.
That's so true.
Right?
If
you don't look at it, though, nothing changes.
If you don't look at it, you won't see it.
You won't see it. Nothing changes. And you're subject to that tragedy happening again in a different way.
One of the things that I thought was a beautiful thing that came out of that day was how New York City band together, restaurants offering food, you know, all of the public service workers working together, just regular people pitching in and helping. It was, emotional.
Yeah, you see the emotion with you.
Such a beautiful time to see the human spirit when humans come together to create something good or to help each other. We're so capable of doing that. And too often, that's not the part that gets glorified.
No, it's really not. I, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about, you know, why do people go to, you know, large sporting events? Why do they go to, you know, large church events? Why do they, you know, I just got back from a triathlon event a couple weeks ago. And, you know, it's because we want to connect with one another, right? We feel that connection.
Yes.
And, you know, most people long for that connection.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be separate. They don't want to be, you know, it's all about me against the world. They really want to come together.
That's right.
As one.
And when we do, when we unite our energy, we are capable of such magnificence. We're capable of something amazing. I'm a big football fan. And so, you know, one of the reasons I'm crazy about the Olympics. And one of the reasons I love watching those kinds of events, I would have loved to have seen your event, because something happens synergistically with the energy when that many humans are gathered together with a kind of a united purpose. And athletes do rise to unbelievable levels. Miraculous things happen. You know, just yesterday I was talking to the president of my networking group, and his energy was so elated. And I said to him, "What's going on?" He goes, "My son just hit a grand slam, and they're at the Little League Championships in New York."
Right.
I mean, and immediately I felt that feeling too, that excitement, like, oh my God, your child doing the pinnacle perfect thing in the perfect moment. Right. It's beautiful.
Right. Well, it's inspiring for all of us when someone exceeds the expectations that they have for themselves or others have on them, and you see that human spirit come out like the Grand Slam. Somebody winning, you know, the Olympics who has a story to get there that filled with tragedy and heartbreak.
Oh yeah,
and they overcome it. So that is the best of human spirit, and I think that's what we all need to strive for. Right.
And I think that's what that is one of the positive things that often comes from tragedy. You know, I think getting to see what we're capable of when we go beyond ourselves and our concern for ourselves, and we're now focused on others.
Well, I love that. And so I think when tragedy strikes, it's a good time to reflect on, how did I show up? How did I contribute? Mm-hmm. Was I of service to others? Mm-hmm. Was I somebody that just shrank? I was in fear. I had to go hide and run.
Yes.
Was I somebody that prayed? Was I somebody that was really there as a volunteer on the front lines? Right. I think those things really reflect on, you know, how we're showing up. And if we don't like how we're showing up, that's fine. That's okay. It's a great first step. We say, okay, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Now, how am I going to do better the next time?
And let's change it. And I'm so glad you brought up fear, because fear is such a huge part of the human condition. And in our next segment, let's explore that a little bit, because we all know fear.
Boy, don't we ever. Yeah, the fear that the terrorists elicit from us is something else. So, let's do that.
All right, we'll be right back.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster. Would you like to help someone in need to move from poverty to prosperity? Stars of Courage, a 501c3 nonprofit, is looking for established life coaches with experience in education and career mentorship to build confidence and create clear paths to success. Join our team of experienced coaches in a wide variety of fields, equipped with warm hearts with a passion for lifting up those in need. Our Stars of Courage. Find out how you can make a difference at starsofcourage.org. That's starsofcourage.org. We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now, here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
Welcome back to Transition Radio, where today we're talking about positive changes that come out of tragedy. And we're just about to dive into fear. Paula is going to tell us a little bit about how fear impacts the mind and how it stops the mind from functioning properly.
Yeah.
As a therapist, she's been able to see probably hundreds of clients that come in with fear-based thinking and walk out, I'm sure, of your practice with a different mindset. But let's talk about this.
Well, you know, there are some lines of thought that everything we do is either based on fear or based on love. Okay. And that may be a little bit simplistic, but that really, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. When you look at what is your motivation for whatever you do. Years ago, I don't know if you ever read the Dune series, but
I didn't, no.
One of the major lines that was carried on throughout the books, there was like four or five of them, Fear is the mind killer. And actually, you know, when I first read it, I was very young, and I didn't totally get what that means. But I do now. I mean, I really see how fear undermines really everything we do. It keeps us from being able to think clearly. You know, when we get scared enough, the cortisol levels rise. And when the cortisol levels rise, they actually turn off the frontal cortex, which is the thinking, problem-solving part of the brain.
So we become stupid, and we make poor choices.
It's a good point. Yeah, well put.
Right?
I mean, right. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, I want to say something about the fear piece, because I think this is important. You know, I think just about any emotion that's a negative emotion is attached to fear, like you just said, right? And so I always ask my clients, I say, you know, what is it that you're afraid of losing? Or what is it you're afraid that you won't get? Okay? So the fear of losing what we have or not getting what we want generally underlies most fear-based thinking.
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah. So if our audience members want to just jot those two little questions down, you can change how your states of mind very quickly. Because even if you're upset, you're angry, you're depressed, you know, you just ask, well, what is it that I'm afraid that I'm not going to get, or I'm afraid that I am going to lose, or what I want? That'll change thinking. That'll change your thinking. That'll change your mind. And you can go, wow, I'm in fear-based thinking. Now, Paula, how do we switch over to love?
Well, before we go there, remember the acronym for fear, F-E-A-R?
Right.
False experiences appearing real.
Right.
So one of the things, just to give our listeners another tip, one of the things I encourage my clients to do when they are caught up in false experiences appearing real is to go from what if to what is. Because what if, those questions tend to create fear.
Yeah, what?
What if the storm wipes us out? What if the fire comes to my house? You know, what if the terrorist attack? But then, rather than focusing on those questions, let's focus on what is. What is, we are safe now.
Right.
What is, the storm is over there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that can tend to be really calming, to just ground yourself in what is real. Because those creative minds of ours can take off and go crazy with what could possibly happen.
Love that. And there is another acronym for fear. It's face everything and recover.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
So it, you know, we're again, it ties into what you just said, Paula. It's looking at current reality. Okay, facing it and then making a decision on what we need to do next.
Yeah.
I had a client that used fear, stuntman. I've told you this story, but I haven't told our audience this. He was a stuntman in Hollywood. In fact, he played Tom Hanks' stuntman several times. And played Tom Hanks several times in his role as a stuntman. Let me qualify that. He said he uses fear to perform every one of his stunts.
Wow.
And so he gave me an analogy. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, imagine going up in a hot air balloon. And then about, you know, 2,000 feet up, you jump out of the hot air balloon on a bungee cord. And then the bungee goes up, and now you snap the bungee cord, and you're free-falling straight down to the earth. And then at the very last moment, you pull a parachute, and you land. He says, all of that is, I'm afraid to do all of that. But he says, what I use is I look at fear and I say, each step of the way, what do I have to do to mitigate the fear going up in the hot air balloon, going out the bungee cord, you know, with the parachute, and finally landing? There's fear in all of it. What are the steps I need to do to mitigate it? And that's how he's become one of the top stuntmen in the world, using fear to help him instead of to crush him.
Well, you know, I was doing a little research on the internet and about ways to fight fear. And the piece I found, there are 10 things you can do to fight fear. One, take time out. Because too often, you know, it's just develops a life of its own, right? And if we just pause, if we stop, then we can get a little better grip on it. Breathe through panic. Breath. You know, one of the things that happens to us so often is that we are not breathing deeply when we're afraid or we're anxious, and we start lacking oxygen to the brain. So that's not good. You sure can't figure out what your stuntman friend did. You can't think well when you don't have enough oxygen in your brain.
That's
so that's
right.
An important one. Face your fears, just like you were saying. He just went step by step by step, walking into the fear. And usually, there's a technique I've used too, where you kind of actually think of the worst possible thing. You go there.
Right.
And what I love to do too is tap these points right on the side of the eye, because in a Harvard study that was done looking at the amygdala firing up when people get afraid,
right.
This they saw sent calming signals to the amygdala.
Wow.
To calm it down.
Wow.
So
just by tapping on the sides of your temples.
Tapping the bones on the side of your eye.
Side of your eyes,
right,
okay.
Not your
right
temples.
Right there, okay.
Yeah. So yeah. That's a really good one. And so actually imagining the worst, walking into it, then look at the evidence. Like we were just saying, what actually is happening here?
Right.
What is? Then number six was don't try to be perfect. If you're afraid, admit it. Number seven, talk to somebody about it. Mm-hmm. And then, so often we try to get positive before we've acknowledged what really is going on with us, right?
Right.
So once you've actually kind of acknowledged it, then you can go to a happy place.
Well, I want to say something with the talking about it, because mm-hmm. if you find somebody that's going to commiserate with you in your fear, that's not what Paul is talking about.
No.
Right.
Yeah, you want to find somebody who can help you shift, right?
Right.
And actually, that person doesn't have a really tough job to do. This is something I was just writing about this weekend. The most important thing we can do for people who are afraid is listen. Just listen to them. Just kind of say, hey, what's going on? I'm listening. And as that person talks through it, it dissipates.
That's right.
It's true of grief as well, mm-hmm. which, you know, I've written about and I work with quite a bit.
Right, right. Yeah.
So the talking can be huge.
What's the next point there, Paula?
And finally, do something physically good for yourself. Get active, maybe. You know, work through the energy. Fear is a real energy, so maybe you want to kick the punching bag, or you want to run, or jump on a bike like
right.
you do, or maybe something more quiet, a massage or a hot bath. Those things can be soothing and helpful. And then finally, when you do this, when you take good care of yourself and you kind of move to the other side, reward yourself.
I like to reward ourselves. Let's think about that. So I'll have to make up some fears so I can reward myself today. That's a good idea.
I used to reward myself with pistachio ice cream.
Oh, that sounds so good.
That's how I got through writing my book. My inner child hated sitting at the computer all that time.
Right.
So I would tell her, if we can just get this chapter done, we're going to Baskin-Robbins.
Right, right. And which you did, this book right here, right? The one on grief that we're looking at.
Grief, when will this pain ever end? Sometimes I felt that way sitting at the computer hour after hour writing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've felt that way too. And, you know, in life, there is, of course, pain and pleasure. And a lot of people won't face the pain to make the change.
Right.
But if you don't face the pain, or if you don't sometimes even create pain in your own body, meaning working out and exercising and, you know, maybe eating things that you don't want to eat, but they're healthy for you.
Right.
If you don't create that pain, then what happens is you're subject to pain down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always there with us. You're not gonna shake it.
That's true.
You know, you can manage it, but it's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Just like fear, it's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can focus on it. Or you can make it something bigger than it really is. Or you can step back, look at it, go through Paula's steps she just gave you, and face everything and recover from it.
You know, I have a personal question for you.
Sure.
You're a triathlete. You get into cold water. You ride a bike for 75 miles or 100 miles, and you have to run. I mean, do you ever feel fear before you start those competitions?
Oh, absolutely. And I will say that fear and excitement are very, very close emotions.
Mm.
So, you know, sometimes you feel this feeling like, ooh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this now. Or you can feel it and say, ooh, I'm excited about it. Which side of the coin do you want to be on? So as an athlete, I take the excited time.
I see.
Okay? It's not about denying it. Sure, there are, you know, I got in the water here a couple of weeks ago, and I was getting ready to swim 2 miles in a lake, and I couldn't even see the buoy. It was out a mile out in the lake where the turnaround point was.
Wow.
And so, you know, I first got in and shock of the water running you know, 1,000 other athletes going in the water. Actually, so that one was 500 other athletes going in the water with me. There's a little fear. You're going to be, you know, hit over the head by somebody's fist. You're going to, somebody's going to swim over you. You know, the body's not going to perform right and all those things.
Yeah.
But eventually, you know, what I do is I talk to myself.
Oh.
Hey, it's going to be okay. It's all good. Mm-hmm. You've trained. You're going to make this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it must be kind of like your stuntman friend. One stroke after the other. You just keep taking it as it comes, right?
In one each step moment. At a time, one stroke at a time. Mm-hmm. Take it in the moment. Be present.
Mm-hmm.
It's that slow down. I tell my clients, slow down to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we overcome fear.
Mm, I love that.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk more about this whole thing in our next segment, where we can get into a little bit about the importance of being positive and being in that state of mind that can get you through anything.
Yeah, this is positive like you've never heard it before. So we'll be right back.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster.
Baby boomers, are you prepared? In a recent study from Transamerica, 45% of baby boomers are expecting a financial decrease in their standard of living after retirement. If you live into your 90s, you can go without a paycheck for 30 years. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton from Sexton Advisor Group. With almost 20 years in the business, I can answer your retirement questions. Get your complimentary retirement guide by calling 1-800-560-2611. That's 1-800-560-2611. Or go to SextonAdvisorGroup.com. That's S-E-X-T-O-N advisorgroup.com.
Is living in today's fast-paced world making you feel stressed and out of balance? Are anxiety, sleeplessness, depression, lack of focus, or weight gain robbing you of your relationship and your energy? If you're ready for change, you need to call Paula Shaw at Rebalancing You. Paula helps you identify and eliminate self-sabotaging thinking and behavior. Using a wide variety of mind-body techniques, she provides her clients with the most effective processes for their specific needs. To book a rebalancing session with Paula, call 858-480-9000. That's 858-480-9234.
We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
Welcome back to Transition Radio. Paula Shaw here with my co-host, Ken D. Foster. And we are talking about 9/11 and the positive things that can come out of tragedies. But that's not just a natural outgrowth. We have to be present. We have to look for it. We have to be open to something positive coming out of something negative, or something that we even would term a tragedy. So what do you, Ken, we were just talking about how you got through your competitions, because you do this triathlete thing that's amazing, one stroke at a time, one step at a time, one spin of the bike wheels, I guess, at a time, too.
Right.
And what do you do to stay positive during, and you must get tired. There must be physical pain that comes along.
You know, with every triathlon, there's a point where you're going to suffer.
Mm.
And you know, it's actually interesting. I heard that from a world triathlon champion. He had won Ironman this last year. And when I heard it, I thought, is that really true? Is it? Do we always suffer? Well, of course we do. You know, if we're trying to push and we're trying to, you know, succeed in life, there are some times we suffer, right? Now, sometimes we feel the pain. Okay, and we can make some changes to adjust. But other times we have to feel the pain and just move through it. And it's not about, you know, the suffering can be very intense, or it can be, oh, here's suffering. It can be a notice. Oh, yeah, I'm my body's hurting. I'm feeling a lot of pain. This is hurting me. Mm-hmm. I'm going through this period right now. Mm-hmm. I know I'll get to the other side. So there's a lot of mental chatter for me that takes place. I remember my first marathon I ever did, half marathon in San Diego, and it was mile nine. And at mile nine, every negative thought that I think I've ever thought in the world hit me. And it just kept just coming in. Why you can't do this? What are you doing? You're not good enough. You'll never get through this. You're all this negative stuff, right? And it was mile nine. And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to be with that in mile nine. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I started affirming that this is going to pass. This too shall pass. Mm-hmm. Be gone. Get out of my head, right? About mile 10, it passed. But here's the cool thing. It didn't just pass. All that negativity passed permanently. I mean, it just blew out of my system.
Wow.
So there's something there that I had to go through to get to the other side.
Kind of like a purge.
It was a purge. Mm. So how many times in life, right, do we have a mountain to cross, okay, like what I just did, you know, when a year ago they were telling me, yeah, you're going to go swim a couple miles and you're going to compete in with Team USA and you're going to be on this, you know, aqua bike path and 75-mile bike after you. I thought, man, after you swim 2 miles, I thought that is huge. How am I ever going to do that?
Yeah.
Right? That would be a great event. And a lot of people think this, oh, it's wonderful at the end how it's going to feel. Mm-hmm. But to get there, there's a lot of pain and training and challenges along the way.
And sacrifices.
And sacrifices.
Mm. And discipline, right?
And discipline.
Because I bet you there are a lot of mornings you didn't want to get out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Boy, isn't that the truth.
Go do your thing.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Okay, so the point of all this is this, okay? With tragedy, or if you're setting a big goal or whatever, with tragedy, nothing changes until you change, right? Mm-hmm. You have to look at what's caused the tragedy, right? You have to look at what's working, what's not working, what we can do better in the future. Mm-hmm. And when we do that on a consistent basis, our life changes, okay?
Yes.
The world might not change.
Mm-hmm.
The world's going to be the world.
Mm-hmm.
But if you change and have more joy and fulfillment and happiness in your life, isn't that what this is about?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, we began talking about all of the difficult things that happened at 9/11. I mean, 9/11 was like a major grief experience for the whole country. And I loved what you just said, feel the pain and move through it. You know, so often when difficult things happen to us, and we're grieving, or we're sad, or we're scared, we try to push it away. You know, it's like this, right, this attitude of the right, positive thinking. Sometimes it is not our friend, because unless we have acknowledged the pain first, like what you said, there's a point where you feel this pain or where you're actually feeling the suffering. And now we have a choice. Do I stay stuck in this?
Right.
Or do I move through it? And people sometimes, I think, are so afraid to feel it at all, they don't do part A before they try to move to part B. So they go to trying to feel positive, think positively, and they haven't yet acknowledged the reality.
Isn't that so true? I mean, I see so many people in stuck in relationship, for example, that mm-hmm. are really in kind of a tragic situation.
Yes.
Because the relationship isn't working. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times the children all know the relationship isn't working.
Yes.
But the adults can't acknowledge what they need to do to change.
Mm-hmm.
What they need to do to, not what their partner needs to do to change, what they need to
right.
do. And that brings that point you talked about earlier up. It's that love piece. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we self-love to the point where we can take tragedy of what's not working, I'm going to call it that, because mm-hmm. really that's what tragedy is.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's not working. It's a big wake-up call
sure.
that, hey, we gotta make something, take some new steps and make some new changes.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do that in a way that is self-reflective. We stop blaming and shaming and shooting on others. We take 100% responsibility and say, what is my part in this? How can I improve and do better? Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, you know, when I started as a triathlete, I was weak. I was afraid. I wasn't confident. But I had one thing going.
What?
I had courage. Mm-hmm. I had the courage to go try it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. And that was the big change. Mm-hmm. That was it. So all you have to have is a little courage to look at that mountain. And, you know, every listener on this call, I'm sure, has some mountain that they are facing, whether it's financially, mentally, emotionally, physically, in their health. Mm-hmm. There's something going on, right?
It's so true. And I think that whole point you just made of having the courage to look at it, sometimes it's so much easier to just get busy and not really sit and look at what there is.
Let me go eat some ice cream. What the heck?
Right.
I don't
exactly.
want to face my challenges.
Or have a drink. Or get high. Or whatever it is we do to avoid our fear and our pain.
Right.
And, you know, I was thinking about Mark Waldman, a former guest on our show, who talked about even just these little 60-second processes we can do, like yawning, moving slowly, that can bring us to an altered state of mind, you know, that can give us more clarity, give us more peace. And I think it's so much about courage, as you said, being willing to look at it, and then the next step, do something about it.
Right.
Take an action.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Well, that's what you do, Paula, and that's what I do. You know, I help people to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible. So you do the same thing. Mm-hmm. As coaches, we help individuals that can't see those blind spots of where they've been denying their own brilliance, their own greatness, their own joy that they can have in their life. A lot of times people come to me, and I'm sure they come to you the same way. They think this is just the way it is.
Yeah.
Right?
And you know, our guest last week, David McNally, who wrote this book, Mark of an Eagle, he made such a beautiful point. He was saying, we all leave our mark on the world, and it's up to us what kind of a mark we want to leave. And you don't just leave a mark if you're Bill Gates or if you're some famous movie star. You leave a mark no matter who you are. And he told the story of his wife by choice, stayed home, raised the children. She didn't go out in the career world and make some huge mark that way. But at her funeral, several people talked about how she used to make tea. The kids would bring their friends home, and they were of British origin. She would serve this beautiful tea to them with scones in China. And the kids all remembered those afternoons with her. And another woman said to him, I never left a conversation with Joe when I didn't feel better.
Wow.
That's a pretty huge mark on the world. And most people don't even know who she was.
So, that's a good question. What is the mark that you are leaving on the world right now? Are you leaving a positive mark? I think all of us can say there's something positive somewhere.
Yes.
You know, but is it predominantly positive? Mm-hmm. Is it something you want to be remembered for?
Right.
Is it something that you're ashamed of? Mm-hmm. All of us have things in the past we're not proud of. I don't think there's a person walking the planet. But can you let that go and move on, and from this moment on say, you know what? Paul and Ken are right. This is the day I start over, and I do my life a little different. I'm going to take a small step every day to become the person I've always wanted to become, or write the book I've always wanted to write, Paula and I have done, or just whatever your mark is. Maybe your mark is just you smile at people, and all of a sudden,
that's right.
They're laughing. I can't tell you how many people that I do that with, and that do that back to me, and it just doesn't it just light your day up when somebody does that.
Yes.
Just a smile.
That's right. That's
we can impact each other with a simple smile.
And you know, kind of bringing this full circle with what we've been talking about today, I think this is a perfect point that we can remember 9/11 and focus on the tragedy and get angry at the people who perpetrated it, or we can remember the beautiful things that came out of it and focus on those, and all of those amazing heroes and human beings who left a beautiful mark on the world through that event.
That's well said, Paula. Wow. Thank you for this beautiful show. And coming up next, we've got our smart money guy, Steve Sexton of the Sexton Advisory Group. You won't want to miss this one. This is really good. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Candy Foster.
There's a question many of us ask ourselves when we are grieving. When will this pain ever end? Life transition coach and grief recovery specialist Paula Shaw wants you to know there is light at the end of the tunnel. In her new best-selling book, Paula gives you information and practical exercises you can use right away in your recovery process, including breathing methods, the emotional freedom technique, energy psychology work, and many other healing tools. Grief, when will this pain ever end? Available now on Amazon.com.
We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now, here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
Welcome back to our Smart Money segment. Here today with Steve Sexton of the Sexton Advisory Group, our favorite guide that shares important tidbits with us every week about what to do with your money and what are the smart ways to handle your money. So today, Steve, we've been talking a lot about 9/11, as it is 9/11, and what happened on that fateful day so long ago. And I think, you know, there's some fear in the country even now about terrorist activity. And I think a lot of people wonder, what should I be doing with my money? Is there anything safe or a safe place to have my money at a time like this when lots of
uncertain times? Yeah. Uncertain. We're living uncertain times.
You know what? This Hurricane Harvey that we're dealing with here.
Exactly.
I mean, an unprecedented amount of rain is hitting the Texas coast and all that. I mean, it's like 50 inches of rain. I mean, that's crazy.
Yes.
And people are flooded. I mean, that has ripple effects in the oil and gas industry. Okay. Mm-hmm. It actually even have effects in the beer industry because Budweiser right now, or Anheuser-Busch, instead of brewing beer, they're brewing water and putting it in cans and sending it to shelters.
Really?
Yeah, they're doing it. This is how they help in crisis.
Wow.
No, a lot of people will help in crisis, but a lot of times people need to help themselves in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so when 9/11 hit, we saw the market drop down and the market close early. We saw it happen the second day. We probably saw a 25-30% drop in the market inside of 2 days. It was crazy.
Wow.
People were afraid. They feared for a run-on on banks and the whole shot.
Sure.
Okay. The thing that people need to understand is they need to realize that, you know, at one of the reasons, whether you like the government or not, they're in place and there's regulatory bodies to make sure those institutions stay intact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It isn't all going to go by tomorrow, so everybody doesn't need to go and buy gold. Okay? But the key here is this. First step, don't panic. Okay? Just don't panic. Assess where you are. If you're in an area like you were in New York and your home has been destroyed, okay, know that the information in the bank, the money's probably still there. Okay. Know that you have insurance, if you have insurance, to be able to take care of those things and replace those items that you lost. Okay. In fact, most people that have fires and things like that, the most important to them thing is the pictures, because everything else can be replaced.
Exactly.
Okay. So the next step, what do I do now that my job's been destroyed or been removed because the company can't, there's many travel companies, hotels that no longer, I mean, their occupancy rate was 20-30%, and they're offering deals left and right, and they had to cut people left and right. I mean, the travel industry probably lost more than 100,000 people in employment.
Wow.
Okay. And that happened throughout the whole country. And you're going to see some of that happen here. And I mean, there's going to be towns that are going to be wiped out. So you're going to have hundreds of people lose their job. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to do to go find a job? Mm-hmm. Where do you go and get resources? The thing is to start making lists of what you need to do to get to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where can I get the resources? There'll be public broadcasts. There'll be the internet. So you want to go find those things. From a financial standpoint, hey, if you don't have a job anymore, hey, you're going to have some unemployment. So you will have some income. If you're disabled from this tragedy, hey, there's Social Security disability. Now, it won't cover everything, so you'll have to find a way to make ends meet.
Sure.
And in the last 9/11, within 6-8 months after that, which I thought was really cool, is there was a lot of people who were adversely affected started their own business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They made money starting their own business.
You know, there is a point where, you know, in my life that I've realized that, you know, this isn't happening to us. It's happening for us. You know, we don't want to hear that in the middle of a tragedy, okay?
No, we don't believe it.
Oh, we don't believe it. But, you know, even if you look at Katrina, what happened, or 9/11, what happened, what, you know, how did the nation become stronger as a direct result of that tragedy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things we started out talking about today, the gifts that can come from tragedies. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're open to that, if we take the time to look for that.
Right.
I know my daughter moved to New Orleans a few years ago, and New Orleans changed so much after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a whole upsurge in improving everything, you know, from the physicality of the city to and a shift in the kind of people that moved there. It's a very family-oriented town, and we don't think about that when we live here. We always just think about Mardi Gras and people partying, being crazy. But it's a family town.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So lots of good things can evolve. But I love what you're saying, Steve, because it's basically like take a breath, you know, make a list, have some well thought out, methodical procedures that you follow. Don't panic. Right?
Mm-hmm. And you know what? The big thing is be realistic. I mean, I deal with people all the time that are, you know what, have given a death sentence due to some disease or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're in financial crisis. And, you know, a lot of times they think family's going to step in and help them. And that isn't always the case.
Right.
You know what, I talked to somebody just the other day that thought their relative that they hadn't seen in 15 years who has all this money would step up and possibly help them. And I said, mm-hmm. you can't rely on that.
Mm-mm.
You really need to take a look at what you can do to better your situation,
mm-hmm.
because you know what, you're going to get some help from the government, you're going to get some help from possibly your church, but most of it's going to have to come from you. And after the crash, the whatever is finished, okay, and they all go away, it's still going to be you. So, you know, that old adage, you know what, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In risk and peril, there's always opportunity, and you have to look for it with your skill set to see what you can do. Talking about Katrina, I personally know of 5 people who have been doing telecommuting, but they process claims and get approvals for doctor's office all over the United States. Okay, that's how they got out of their strife, because their doctor's offices were destroyed and closed and weren't going to open for a year or two.
Oh.
So they went and processed claims for hospitals and other places. And now those people have a wonderful business. They're making 5 times what they made before. It's just, where's the opportunity? Don't look at little mice. Look at bigger animals to go and slay, so to speak. So you're not feeling good a little bit, but you can make something big come out of it. But you can take care of it yourself.
That's such a great point. Ken was saying even earlier, does something good always come out of a tragedy? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, no.
But
no.
The way you're talking, what
yeah.
you're advising people to do, yeah. absolutely can open yeah. the door to something really good emerging
yeah.
from the tragedy.
You know, I also know of people from 9/11 that still haven't gotten past it and are still living on government subsistence, and they're upset at every form of government because they didn't take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people really need to understand that government was never there to take care of you. When they set up Social Security, FDR said it, this is a bump in pay so people can have the opportunity to retire, not to be your whole retirement.
That's right.
And you know, entitlement programs such as Social Security disability, getting help on health care, it's all really designed to help somebody get to the point where they can move to the next step and be self-subsistence.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't pull back and sit there and hope that somebody's going to pay for the rest of your life, because it just isn't going to happen.
Right. And again, the point you make is attitude and action has so much to do with what happens to you. Again, these people you're describing, I would call them stuck in their grief, stuck in the loss, stuck in the negativity, rather than seeing a way out, moving through those feelings and then looking for the possible solution.
And I want to comment there too, because there's a piece here that I think I just want to plus what you said, Paula. A lot of times we get stuck in the tragedy or the looking at what didn't work, what's wrong, and there's always infinitely more solutions than there are problems.
Yeah.
Infinitely, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I think people need to realize, even with this Harvey thing, you know what? Hey, your house has been wiped out. You and your family are together. Be grateful for that. But realize you have no place else to go but up.
Well, that's true.
That's
you know, when you flatten out, you get to go up again.
Yeah, you go. I mean, it's just like somebody who survived a heart attack, or like when I woke up from the hospital surviving my cancer, I knew I had no place else to go but up, and that's it.
Yeah. And I don't want to sound heartless, because I know that, you know, all of us here at Transition Radio, our hearts and our prayers go out to everybody at Harvey now. This is about maybe the next step. This is about the next step, right? Because we know there's suffering and pain and tragedy here.
Totally. Yeah.
And when you dry off a little bit.
When you dry off, yeah. When you dry off. But it's never too late or soon to start focusing on, like somebody said here, gratitude and, you know, what we have, right, instead of what we don't have.
I love what you said earlier, Ken. I think it comes down to there are many ways we can look at any situation in our lives. But I love that idea, nothing is happening to you, everything is happening for you.
Yeah. And you know, we're that's the theme, but you know, and I think Steve Sexton at the Sexton Advisory Group, Steve, you always have profound wisdom on what to do financially. So any closing thoughts here on this show?
You know what? Understand, if you're in a crisis, once you've realized that you're at a starting point, just make sure you know what it takes for your family to survive. This isn't the time to go buy a whole bunch of new stuff. It's to figure out what you need from a bare necessity standpoint, and then take specific steps on how much am I going to use to create the income I need to move forward? How much am I going to use to go get to work or to take care of kids or to whatever, and stick to that budget. Okay, stick to it for a while until you get to a point where you're banking money again, and then move forward with buying those other necessities that you think you might need.
Mm-hmm. It's just good advice, really good advice.
Good advice. And if you want to find out more about Steve Sexton, go to
thesextonadvisorygroup.com or give us a call at 1-800-562-2611. Nope, that's right. I got
that's
it right.
That's it, okay.
Do you remember your phone
number, Steve? Okay. Well, that's good. Well, listen, everyone, thank you for joining us, and thank you, Steve, for being here on Transition Radio. You can listen to all of our shows, including this one, on transitionradioshow.com. We're on 14 additional podcasts. We just picked up another two stations this week, and including iHeart and Blog Talk. And so we're out there. So we hope you'll give us some likes on our Facebook, and also tell your friends about us. Thank you so much for joining us.
See you next week.